This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Coming up, the new executive director of Jamokey Academy in Hartford gives us an update on the charter school network a year after a scandal which prompted new state legislation about transparency in charter schools. But first, the Hartford suburb of Bloomfield has gone through decades of problems with its school district. Back in 2007, only 7% of sophomores met state math goals. That was the lowest in the state. A few years later, the town's high school was named one of five lowest performing schools in Connecticut eligible for a federal turnaround grant. That same year, Bloomfield hired Dr. James Thompson, Jr., a former principal in Hartford. He's now credited with one of the most impressive turnarounds in the state. Right now, the graduation rate for Bloomfield High School is 90%. 72% of those grads went on to college. We read a profile of Dr. Thompson in the Bloomfield District in a piece by Bob Fromm of the Connecticut Mirror. We decided to bring him in to talk about his school transformation and his philosophy. You can join the conversation at 860-275-7266. You can always find us at WNPR.org/Where We Live and on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. Dr. James Thompson, welcome to Where We Live. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for the invite.
First of all, describe Bloomfield for our listeners who don't know much about the town.
Bloomfield is a suburb of Hartford, a population of roughly about 19,000 residents. The school district has a enrollment of around 2,100. What's very interesting about Bloomfield relative to the population is that 90% of the students are of color, primarily African American and West Indian. And 10% are Caucasian and Asian, Latino, what have you.
It is important to point out because when we initially think of suburbs in Connecticut, we think of urban districts being ones with very high population of minority students and suburban districts being very high population of Caucasian students. Mm-hmm. And that's essentially the opposite here in Bloomfield. It's a town that's changed over the years. That racial makeup has changed over the last several decades, right?
Yes, it has. Roughly about 35 years ago, Bloomfield, the town, was recognized by Look magazine as one of the diverse towns in Connecticut, and that has obviously changed considerably.
How does that show up for you on the day-to-day education of your students? I mean, how much does it matter that we have a 90 to 10 racial makeup in the town of Bloomfield right now?
Well, we are working on that challenge to two things we like to do is for the district school district is to be more diverse and also to allow families to have greater choice relative to their choice of schools.
So what does that mean? How does choice play out in the town of Bloomfield?
Well, right now, when you take a look at the structure of the schools in Bloomfield, our schools are structured by grades. All of our K students, K1 and 2 students, attend Laurel. All of the students in grades 3 and 4 attend Metacomet. And for the most part, the students who are in grades 5, 6 attend our intermediate school, and we have a middle school for grades 7 and 8. Now, we have a comprehensive high school. We also have 2 magnet schools. We have one for pre-K and K, Wittenberry, and we have a very impressive, improving magnet school, GEMS, for grades 6 through 12.
So you offer students in the district some choice within those boundaries. How much has the outgrowth of the Sheff versus O'Neill school desegregation decisions some decades ago surrounding Hartford and its regional public schools, how has that impacted you? Because the entire idea of Sheff was essentially to increase racial diversity in every classroom. The thought is that if you have more white students and black students, Latino students learning next to each other, there would be better outcomes for all. So how has the Sheff decision affected you?
Well, there are some unintended consequences that Sheff has brought about relative to Bloomfield Public Schools, relative to choice. A number of the families have choiced out of Bloomfield and have enrolled their child or children in a number of the correct magnet schools.
Yeah, and so the impact for you then is what? If if parents are taking their students out of Bloomfield Public Schools and they're going into a magnet school maybe in some other town, what does that mean for you?
That means the enrollment is declining. And the decline in enrollment, it's really something that is occurring across the state and across the country. So this has an impact on the decline in enrollment, aside from other factors.
Okay, so if you have a declining enrollment and you have maybe some parents who are opting to take their kids to another school to get a better education, how do you then academically deal with that? Because what we have heard for years is whenever there's this movement, sometimes the traditional, say, high school is in many ways left behind. You end up with students who maybe have more difficulties in learning, maybe parents who in some cases aren't as engaged to move their kids to another district. And so you're having to deal with the population that you have. So what have you done?
Well, a number of things. Let me talk about, you know, the reform that has occurred in Bloomfield over the last 4+ years. I like to talk about when I first arrived in 2011. One of the first things I did was create a transition entry plan. It was a 100-day plan, and I had two objectives in mind. The first one is to gather information about the community, and the second objective was to assess the organization's strengths and challenges. The strategy that I implement to achieve the outcome of the objectives, number one, was to conduct a listening and learning tour. And that was to meet with staff, with students, with teachers, with parents, with elected leaders, what have you. The next strategy was to review the current documents and also data about the district to get a really good sense in terms of what's going on. And also, by reviewing the data and the documents, it really led to prioritizing our focus. And that ultimately had an impact on our district accountability plan.
Okay, so well, let's talk about the listening tour and the data. What were you hearing from people all across the district, the parents, the teachers, the students? What were you hearing?
Well, first and foremost, folks are very proud of the town, okay? And there are a number of positive things that were occurring in Bloomfield. I often refer to, at that time, a tale of two cities. The elementary, intermediate, and middle school, they were doing fairly well when you take a look at the performance data of our students. The high school was a different story. Mm. Okay, the high school was a unit that required tremendous amount of focus and attention and work. Folks are very concerned about that. Also, I think all of the stakeholders pretty much wanted to see an aggressive plan that would address not only the high school, but they also, and I concur, and part of my focus and goal was to improve student performance across the board.
So I'll just ask you then, how does it come to be that students are having good progress through the elementary years? And then they get to high school and something changes. Then the high school isn't performing well enough. What, from coming into the district from outside, looking at this, what do you think was happening there?
Well, that's a very interesting question that you're asking. And let me share with you. We have data teams at three levels. We have data teams at we have a district data team. We have a school level data team. And also we have data teams that operate at the grade level and content. I recall attending a data team meeting during the 2011-2012 school year. And at this particular meeting, we were reviewing the data of our 10th graders, their performance, looking at the benchmark assessment that really aligns and mirrors what students are expected to know and do upon completing 10th grade. And the data that we were reviewing at this particular meeting was very disappointing. Hmm. And it was the data of our honor students. And I referred to what was going on as if the students were falling off the cliff. And we looked at these students from a historical standpoint, looking at their data from grades 3 up into 8, and these students were performing very well. and why all of a sudden, why they're in high school in 10th grade and they're not performing. And there are a couple of things that we discovered. Number one, there was a misalignment relative to the curriculum and what was actually being taught. There was also a need for more rigor. There was also a need for additional learning opportunities for these students. So we began to address the misalignment piece. We also took a look at providing these students with additional learning opportunities.
And we're talking with Dr. James Thompson, Jr. He's superintendent of Bloomfield Public Schools, public school district in Connecticut, just outside of Hartford, that has transformed itself and increased its test scores, increased its graduation rate. We're trying to figure out on the program today a little bit of what Bloomfield has been able to do to improve so much, and we'll get some of your phone calls in just a moment. I think that that piece of it is so interesting, the sense that you see a misalignment, you see that students who are performing well up to a certain point are now, in your words, falling off a cliff, and that is something that needs to change. So one of the things you said is more learning opportunities. Mm-hmm. So what does that mean? Does it mean longer school days, more opportunities for students to learn after school, during the summertime? What is it you're talking about?
Well, when I refer to extended learning opportunities, it could be an extended school day. It could be an extended school week. And also what we have going on right now, summer school, it can be an extended school year. And that's something that Bloomfield Public Schools, we've been doing quite well for the last 4-plus years.
Mm. How much of the success that you have seen in the last couple of years has to do with just a change of mindset, a change of focus of the individuals that were here before, or was there a wholesale change of some of the teachers and others who were working in the schools? I mean, what exactly accounted for this mind shift?
Well, I think you have to take a look at our strategic plan. There are four priorities. The first one is holistic accountability. The second one is rigorous curriculum, instruction, and assessment. The third one is positive school climate. And number four is family and community engagement. Each one of those priorities are very important. When you ask about the change, I think one of the biggest change that I think occurred in the implementation of this plan is the buy-in and the collaboration of our staff, particularly our teachers. Our teachers had a lot to do with developing the district accountability plan. Their voice was there. Also, in addition to the buy-in, their role in the accountability plan, they played a very significant role in also writing our new curriculums in English, language arts, and math that is aligned to the new standards. So I think it's really critical, it's key for buy-in, for collaboration, in order for any plan to be implemented successfully.
What's interesting about that, though, too, is that so you and your staff identify certain things that you need to change, but you referred to the fact that there are these new Common Core state standards that are being overlaid onto that. So you've got the federal government setting some guidelines having to do with how schools should operate across the country, somewhat on the same playing field. You've got the state, of course, wanting to oversee school districts like Bloomfield that have historically had more learning difficulties. So maybe you can talk about that balance of how you were able to determine what you thought needed to happen in Bloomfield Public Schools versus all of the other things that are placed upon you, whether or not it has to do with standardized testing or a new Common Core standard of curriculum. It seems as though these things could be at odds with one another, but maybe I'm wrong.
Well, let me talk about standards. Standards are standards. What any district in town have a lot leeway relative to the prescribed curriculum. Mm-hmm. And so the standards are just standards. And I think really in terms of what is actually the course of study, and that's the curriculum. Mm-hmm. And that's really the work of the district. And it has been the work of our staff in Bloomfield.
I'd like you to talk a little bit about the specific needs of students of color. We, I think, in America have had this long-running conversation about the difficulty of educating specifically young black men in urban districts. And every district has its own approach to this. But I'm wondering if you can talk about that piece of it, because I know part of it, Doctor, is purely academic and purely educational. But there's something else that's there, too. I mean, if race didn't matter, mm-hmm. then we wouldn't be seeing some of the issues and the problems that we see across America. But it does clearly. So I guess I'm wondering how you work that into the equation of how you teach.
That's a very interesting question and also statement that you're making. Relative to when you take a look at our students and providing support for students who can be somewhat at risk. The support that we've put in place, particularly at Bloomfield High School, is we have two mentoring programs. We have every adult is responsible for a mentor, every adult in the building. In addition to the school-based initiative mentoring program, we also have a program that is run by a group in the community. It's called the Sons of Solomon. And it's a group of professional men of color who come into the high school. They're there every week, and they work with a certain number of students, developing a relationship with them. And I think that is very, very important. But that does not take the place of the importance of parent engagement and parent involvement. I can go back to that's one of our priorities.
And how do you foster that? Because that's something we hear from teachers across the board as they say, we want the parents to be involved. We want parents to really be a part of their child's education. And sometimes they are more apart and sometimes they're much less apart. So how do you foster that within your school district?
Well, there are a couple things. Okay, we do things at the district level and also, but more importantly, what occurs at the school level. Each school has a plan in which it engage and involve parents and also members of the community. At Laurel, we have a program that's very, very effective. It's a group of our males. It's called the Watchdog Program. And that's extremely, extremely effective. That's our fathers, our grandfathers, our uncles, and also just men who really wants to be involved. They come into the school, and also they participate in a number of activities in that school. Metacomet has a great involvement with Doncaster. They have volunteers that come into the school and do phenomenal work. At A-Race, they have their partners. This is in addition to how they engage parents. And I shared with you the engagement that occurs at the high school level. So it's important for each school to come up with a really comprehensive strategic and very meaningful plan to engage members of the students' families and also community folks.
If you have a question for Dr. James Thompson from Bloomfield Public Schools, you can call us at 860-275-7266. This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. We're talking with Dr. James Thompson, superintendent of Bloomfield Public Schools. So what happens next for your district? So you start when you're coming here. You were previously employed in Hartford. You start here in 2011, and you've seen some of these turnarounds already and test scores and the number of people who are graduating. So What happens next? As we talk about a district that is turning things around, the question is, how do you know when you're turned around and heading in the right direction?
Well, I think you have to pay attention to the data. The data really suggests that we are moving in the right direction. We are definitely not in a position to rest on our laurels. We are looking forward to greater achievements. Also, one of our next steps is really to do something relative to address the issue of racial isolation.
When we talk about graduation rates, we had on Robert Cotto Jr., who is a lecturer at Trinity College. He's also on the Hartford Public School Board. And he was talking a little bit about this. Let's just listen to some of what he had to say, because I want to ask you a question about graduation rates.
The new formula starts with those freshmen, goes all the way to senior year, tries to follow those students. But it also adjusts, and it takes out students that have transferred to another school or another state, or maybe even homeschooling, for instance. And so those students that transfer out of a cohort, we don't know very much about those particular students. This kind of movement of students, what it does is it kind of artificially boosts up graduation rates. And what we don't know is whether or not kids are getting the vast and the rich experiences that they need to really be prepared for whatever it is that they're going to do after high school, whether it's get a job, go to the military, go to college. And if we're just kind of shuffling kids around and not really helping them in the school that they're at, if we're not giving them the support that they need to really be successful, then it's kind of artificial when we see those graduation rates go up if kids are being shuffled around.
So one of the things we were talking with him about is he did this statewide study about how graduation rates across the state in charter schools and in public schools are in many cases going up, but it's hard to track these students over the course of the 4 years they're supposed to be in high school. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because you've already mentioned that you've had an outflow of students out of Bloomfield, which must make it very difficult to keep track of the students that you have. How do you deal with those numbers?
We have data. We have the technology to track students. But I think what Cotto was referring to, in districts that have high mobility, we're very fortunate in Bloomfield where our mobility and stability, let me talk about stability because yeah. There's two different sets of data points. The stability is very, very high in Bloomfield. So we have very few students transferring out during the school year. So it's not really a major problem as what Mr. Cotto was referring to for Bloomfield.
In the town of Bloomfield, just to ask you one last question. Do you have a goal in mind for what long-term success looks like? I mean, I know you've talked about what a turnaround school can be, but I mean, what's going to make you happy when you are done at the end of the day?
Another very excellent question, too. When you talk about sustaining success, we refer to it as, not just maintaining the growth, but also improving the growth. I would like to see where 100% of our students are reading at the goal level. And that's higher than the state goal or target of 80%. Those are the kinds of goals that I have for Bloomfield Public Schools. All students are achieving at a very high level.
Well, Dr. Thompson, I wish you the best of luck in that, and I appreciate you sharing some of the story of Bloomfield and what you've done over the course of the last few years. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you. Thank you for having me here.
When we come back, we're going to continue our conversation with educators and talk with the new head of the Jamoke Academy in Hartford. This is Where We Live. This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Today we're talking with educators in the program. Last year, a scandal surrounded the Hartford-based Jamoke Academy and its management organization. The former head of the charter school group had lied about his education, saying he had a doctoral degree when he didn't. What he did have was a criminal record in the past. He had been accused of rampant nepotism, of misspending state money. Investigations by the state and the FBI followed. The scandal even prompted some state legislation, which Governor Malloy just signed into law. The so-called Charter School Transparency Bill increases accountability for state funds going to charters and requires more transparency over financial and hiring records. Now, Jamoke, which runs three schools for kids in kindergarten through eighth grade in Hartford, is being run by a new leader, Dr. Troy Monroe. He's here to talk about how the school is moving forward, and we welcome you into Where We Live. Thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate it.
Good morning, John. Thank you very much for having me.
First of all, I'd like to just go back to last year, maybe so that we can clear up a little bit of where your schools stand following the investigations. Are there any ongoing investigations into the management company that had run your schools or into Jamoke itself right now?
Yeah, my understanding is that the ongoing investigations of last year, particularly as far as the FBI is concerned, that has been closed. We are still currently working with the Connecticut State Department of Education in terms of some additional inquiries that they have related to some of the properties that we have. But essentially, the investigation, as I understand it, from the authorities has closed.
And as far as the organization, Family Urban Schools of Excellence, this is no longer the management organization of Jamoke?
That's correct. They are no longer the management organization of Jamoke.
Are there any ongoing sanctions from the State Department of Education surrounding your schools that you know of?
Well, we are currently, or at least moving forward, we are coming under the new charter school legislation mm-hmm. in terms of things that we've already been doing, which is now going to be law for everyone. And so you referenced at the top of the show laws around being more transparent and being upfront with, about your financials and things of that nature. So from that perspective, that is what I could tell you. I also would share with you that we are also expected to share regular ongoing communication with the State Department of Education. I provide a monthly report. Actually, I have one due real soon. And so yeah. I provide a monthly report at the end of the month to the commissioner and her cabinet about our monthly activities.
You were part of the administration at Fuse before, and what did you know about what was happening? Was any of this a surprise to you when we started reading about it in the Hartford Current and we were reading about it in other places?
Yeah, very much so. Very much a surprise to me. As you know, I came from the world of public school education, and so charter school world is relatively new to me still. But it was very much a shocker. And my past role, I came and served as the academic director for approximately a year.
How is it different? How are public schools different from charters?
Well, I've been spending the last year trying to figure that out. I think that, at least from my perspective, we do a lot with really working with our families. We work well with our families. Parent engagement is at a whole nother level. Okay, I was surprised to find out, particularly at a charter school, there's so many misconceptions and misperceptions about charter schools. But we do parent involvement at a high level. In terms of our day-to-day governance pieces, parent involvement in terms of some of the say and how the schools are conducted, how we run business. We also, from my experiences in public school education, charter school education, we really celebrate student achievement a lot. We celebrate a lot of things, but really student achievement, put the spotlight right on our scholars as it should be. I also think that we have a little bit more flexibility in terms of some of the positions that we may have a need for that supports the development of our scholars. And we also provide a true commitment to wraparound services. We have a definitive before and after school care program, which a lot of our families need. And there's a strong desire for that. So those are some of the highlights that I could offer you at this time.
Yeah. So one of the questions always around charter schools, and having come from the public school system, you'll have a really good insight into this, is that people who run or have their kids in traditional public schools say, well, all those things sound great. Boy, I wish you could have that at my school. And not necessarily that it's a charter, not necessarily that it's run by some outside organization, but that every school in America, every public school in America should have all of those same things. So I guess one question is, why do you think that some of these things are available at some charter schools that you just talked about, and they're not available at the public school down the street?
Yeah, I really think it's all about the culture that you cultivate with your parents. Okay, that's number one. But in addition to that, it's about the culture that you create within your workforce. We have a committed faculty and staff. I have a committed leadership team. Okay. We hire people that want to work with our scholars, who want to work in this community, who want a better opportunity for scholars in and around Hartford. And so when you have those magic ingredients, and people refer to as, you know, they want to know what's in the secret sauce. Mm-hmm. Okay, when you have everyone working together for the greater good, it works. It works. And so we do understand, again, you know, what our mission, the mission was of the school. And that's to make sure that you provide scholars every opportunity, children, you know, in Hartford and in surrounding towns to be successful in this global society, which is part of our mission and vision. But also we're providing a culture of love and support. And that's what our founder, Thelma Ellis Dickerson, wanted for the children that we serve. And I recently had an opportunity to play back a video clip, and I play it back frequently to just make sure I'm on par with what she wanted. And she reminds us to make sure that when our scholars leave Jamoke Academy and people see them, that they see them as coming from a place where they were loved, that where they were nurtured, where they were supported. It's not about the accolades. If you listen to Mrs. Dickerson, it's not about the accolades. She could have cared less about that. It's not about the publicity. It's about what we're doing to really make sure that our children, our scholars, are being successful and coming from a loving environment. And once you create that loving environment with all parties working toward the same common good, then there's no choice but for them to be successful. Okay? And so I think that's a really big part of the secret sauce, so to speak.
Who are your students? So who attends your three schools?
So we have approximately over 60% of our scholars come from Hartford, Connecticut. The rest come from surrounding towns and around Hartford. We have about 89% of our scholars are African Americans. We have another 7% or so that classify themselves as other. Very small percentages of scholars who classify themselves as Hispanic and Caucasian and American Indian. Very small. But again, we recognize that, again, our charter school is a school for all scholars, all students. And we welcome that. We encourage that. As a matter of fact, we've had some extensive efforts over this past year to really reach out to other communities. To give you an example, we've been really trying to tap into our Hispanic community here in Hartford as well. There's a spot with a local paper, I think it's called La Identidad. Mm-hmm. And I had an opportunity to clarify a lot of misconceptions about who we are as a charter school. And so if you don't know us, then you have a false perspective on who we are.
What were those misconceptions?
Well, first of all, the reporters that came in thought we were a parochial school or a religious school. So, no, we're not a religious school. They indicated that they had no idea that we had athletic or intramural opportunities for kids. They did not know it was a lottery system, okay? And they did not – they thought it was a school exclusively for African-American scholars. Okay, mm-hmm. So those are some things I had an opportunity to clarify for the community.
And so it's a lottery system. So essentially, students who are both in Hartford and in surrounding districts can opt into a lottery, and then they're chosen or not to actually be able to attend one of your schools.
That's correct. We had our lottery this past spring. It was a first-time experience for me, and being new in my role, I really need to experience a lot of how the district has operated and a lot of how we should be operating. So I wanted to see it firsthand. And so we had an evening where it was open to the public. We did have several parents who came to actually participate and see and listen for their child's name to be called and number. You had some really shouting because they were very happy and enthusiastic about getting in. And you had some who left very disappointed because their children ended up on a waiting list. I'm happy to say that a couple months ago, shortly after the lottery was held, we had approximately 90 scholars on a waiting list for our elementary program. And that was good news, you know, for us, particularly after the year that we've had. So I'm pretty excited about that. And we still have scholars on a waiting list today. And so we're doing something right.
You talked about some of the misconceptions perhaps within the Latino community that you're trying to address. What have you heard from people since the news of last year? Obviously, a lot of parents probably read the newspaper just like everyone else and said, well, it seems as though they do a pretty good job educating kids, but if they're not going to run things in a way that makes sense, maybe I don't want my kid to go there. I mean, have you heard a lot of complaints or questions? What have you heard from parents?
Well, John, I want to be very clear. and I appreciate this question from you. Our parent community remains strong. The support from the community is very strong. I have not heard any complaints about it. I think what parents really care about is that, go back to the mission, is that we love our children, okay? We create a nurturing environment for them. And, yes, we provide a quality educational experience for them. And so the parents recognize that people are people, adults are adults, and, you know, things happen. But despite that, how are we going to continue to create the best educational opportunities for children? That's what our teachers do on a day-to-day basis. That's what my leadership team does on a day-to-day basis. That's what our parents do. We talk about how we continue the legacy of Thelma Ellis Dickerson and provide the best experiences for our scholars in and around Hartford.
We're talking today about education in and around the city of Hartford, and some of the things we're talking about can be applied certainly statewide. We're talking with Dr. Troy Monroe, who's executive director of Jamokey Academy in Hartford. We're going to come back right after this break and talk more Where We Live. This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Coming up tomorrow, Connecticut 2nd District Representative Joe Courtney will stop by for a check-in. We'll get an update from the nation's capital, talk with him about the Iran deal and much more. As always, we'll take your questions here on Where We Live. Today, we're visiting with two educators engaged in turnarounds of sorts. We talked with the superintendent of the Bloomfield Public Schools about some of what that district has done. Today, we're talking also with Dr. Troy Monroe, who's executive director of Jamokey Academy in Hartford. That charter school organization was embroiled in a scandal last year, and he's the new head of Jamokey, and we're talking with him about some of the changes there and also what they're doing to educate kids from K through 8th grade in Hartford. I guess one thing I want to ask you about is the difference in educating younger children versus high schools. We spend, especially in urban districts, I spend a lot of time talking about high schools because high schools are where we see problems show up. It's where we see kids deciding to drop out of school. It's where we sometimes, unfortunately, see everything from violence to misbehavior. But the work that gets done between kindergarten and high school is so incredibly important. So from your standpoint, operating three schools that are not high schools, how do you view educating younger children versus a high school environment, which I think in some ways is very different?
Yeah, I haven't had much experience with the high schools. I think I've spent maybe a month in a high school environment in my professional career. But I would say that, again, it goes back to not only creating the nurturing environment and the culture for success at the elementary level, but also focusing on making sure that our scholars have key programs in place, a strong curriculum in place, and really focus on literacy and numeracy, which is consistent with the goals of our Common Core. And so we have invested a lot of our resources into programming to support those pieces, as well as the social development of our scholars. And that's not to say that high schools don't have those pieces, those ingredients, but we put a hyper-focus on those areas so that when they come out, that we've equipped them with everything that they need to be successful. And then, again, you go back to, again, involving our parents in that process and having conversations with our teachers, our leadership team, ongoing focus on what are our goals for improvement. And then looking at our data and making those decisions based on what the data is telling us. Again, things that high schools should be doing as well.
Are the students that you're preparing up through eighth grade, are they ready to go into a general high school environment? I mean, sometimes, you know, if these kids are being educated in this environment, very rigorous, with the love that you're talking about, person to person, and then they go into a general high school environment, that's a very, very different world.
Yeah. It is a different world, but our scholars are very, very prepared to go into any environment. And so we have scholars that go to some of the finest independent schools in and around our state, and they're very successful. As a side note, we have a number. I think the numbers are somewhere a little over couple million dollars that have been afforded to some of those scholars who've chosen that for themselves. They've gotten those types of scholarships this past year alone. And so independent schools recognize that we have scholars worth pursuing to come into their environments. We also have a number of scholars that go on to some of the finest magnet schools here in the state of Connecticut. And they are successful. And then we have some that choose to go on to similar type schools, like Achievement First, for example. So they go on to a school that fits them and is consistent with what their experiences are. So I don't think that we are doing our scholars a disservice at all. I think if anything, we're preparing them for even greater success because of the foundation that we've given them.
That point about, you know, students going on to a situation that fits them is, I think, it's another thing that people will often question about the charter school environment, which is that sometimes students are a good fit for an environment, sometimes they're not a good fit. Public schools, traditional public schools, really don't have a choice as to who they get to educate and who they don't get to educate. In many ways, a traditional public school, it's like an emergency room, right? You show up and somebody's got to take care of you. And so one of the criticisms leveled at charter schools, more at the high school level than at the K through 8 level, is that if a student is not a good fit, they're not academically performing, that they are able to in some ways be said, told, look, maybe this isn't the right fit for you. Why don't you move on to your neighborhood school? We're going to educate some other kids who are better fits. What that does is it enables you to have higher graduation rates, better test scores, et cetera, et cetera. So how specifically do you deal with that? Because clearly you want to be able to give all kids the best education, not just the select few.
And that's a misperception from my standpoint. I think before I came into charter school, I had the same perceptions as well. But now that I'm in it, I can honestly tell you that is not the case. As a matter of fact, some of my principals on some days when they're challenged, they probably wish I would subscribe to that. But, you know, we believe in working with our children. We believe in working with our families. And we're not throwing away our children. We're not throwing away our scholars. We're going to work with them. We're going to work with those families. We're going to work with those parents until we experience some success. And sometimes the light doesn't turn on in grade 5 or 6 or 7. Maybe it comes on in grade 8. Or maybe, you know, when they get in high school, they'll come back and they say, hey, you know what? We recognize the experiences and the culture you created for us, and we want to thank you for that. We've had some scholars to come back and share that this past year and their families. And so that says to me that we're doing something that works. But we're not being selective in terms of who we allow to stay with us. Again, it's a true lottery system. We take who we get. It's not a charter school where it's exclusive to just regular education students. We have special education students, just as a public school does. We have students well on the continuum as far as special education is concerned. So we do the same jobs that many of our other educators do in their systems.
What's the percentage of kids who are on free and reduced price lunch in your schools?
I believe approximately, I'm going to give you an approximate number. I would say at least 70%, approximately 70, 73%.
And how about English language learners? I know you mentioned about reaching out to the Latino community. Another thing that often is said about charter schools is that public schools, especially in a city like Hartford or Bridgeport, they're educating a lot of kids for whom English is not their first language. And that is one of the biggest barriers possible. If you're educating mostly kids who have English as their first language, you've already, you know, been able to overcome one of the barriers. So what's your percentage of English language learners who are in your schools right now?
We have a very small percentage, probably less than 2 or 3%. But again, we have some those are the ones that have identified themselves that we know of. But that we need to do a better job at really teasing that out. What are the other languages that our scholars and families speak, and have those families really identify them so we can properly support them? But again, when you talk about the Hispanic population, that's only just a small segment of our community. It's a small segment of what makes up our schools. And so, again, We recognize that we need and we want to do a better job at our outreach in terms of diversifying our scholars and giving them those experiences which will make them successful, again, in this global society.
If along with, in the future, if along with state money that comes to charter schools, there is more oversight, we already talked about some of the transparency, but there is more, requirements that you educate more English language learners or that you educate more kids who have special needs. Is that something that you would welcome within your school system?
Absolutely. We're not turning away students and children. We're not turning them away at all. I think along with that, what we need to be prepared for is how do we acquire the resources to support those populations. You got to remember, we don't have the same pot of resources that our public schools have. And so the whole notion of doing more with less comes into play. And how do we support them? So, again, we do have working agreements with districts that come to us. We have some shared services. But, again, we need to, have the resources to make sure that every scholar is successful. And that's the bottom line.
You don't have some of the same pot of resources, but you don't have some of the same requirements. I mean, what are the requirements that are different for you folks as opposed to a regular public school as far as, say, who you get to hire to be a teacher?
Yes. And so as far as hiring is concerned, let me take this opportunity to clarify some things as well. Sometimes people feel that we have teachers in our workforce that are not certified, and that's not true. We hire certified teachers, okay, just like our public schools. We also have opportunities to work with organizations such as Teach for America, which have a very small percentage of Teach for America in our workforce. But again, I imagine if public schools wanted to do that, they could. But again, there are state requirements around supporting those schools. But we do hire individuals from Teach for America. We also have individuals who and these are very small percentages, that have charter school educator permits. Okay. But I think it's also important to note that based on data that was made available to me from this past year, we have over 56% of our Jamoke Academy staff hold bachelor's degrees, 35% have master's degrees, and then we have academic supports as well by academic assistants. Some of those folks have degrees as well, associate's degrees, and a couple individuals who have doctoral degrees as well. So, again, my focus as an executive director has been on making sure that we hire the best and the brightest. Our kids should not be deprived of having the best and the brightest just because we're a charter school. I think that in order to make sure that we're providing them the best that we can give them, there needs to be a focus on that. And so that's been one of the strategic goals that we've had as a leadership team for this past year, and it continues. And if I may also offer
one
other thing, when I reflect on this past year's recruiting season, I'm happy to say that we've had a number of candidates desiring to come and work for Jamoke Academy, which is kind of refreshing. Given, the concerns of last year, people still want to work for us and want to work to support our children. They want to support our mission. And so it's a good position to be in. And again, it gives us an opportunity to see who's out there and let's bring them in to our organization so that we can continue to thrive.
I want to thank you very much for joining us. Our guest was Dr. Troy Monroe. He's executive director of Jamoke Academy in Hartford, Connecticut. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
If you want to continue this conversation, go online to WNPR.org/where we live. Our program produced by Lydia Brown, Tucker Ives, Betsy Kaplan. Our technical producer is Kion Wolf. Our digital editor is Heather Brandon. The executive producer of Where We Live is Katie Tolarski. Thanks to our team of interns, Anna Geismar, Hallie St. Germain, Jules Lefebvre, Allison Ehrenreich, Nicole Wetzman, and Charlie Smart. I'm John Dankosky. This is Where We Live.